Thank you, everybody. Welcome to the Transportation Finance Committee. I'm Representative Hornstein. We have our first bills on the agenda, so really appreciate that. And our first bill for the day is House File 226. And Representative Norton is already in position, so I appreciate that. And this is a bonding bill, members, and so what we've decided to do with these bonding bills is to hear them, but they're properly in the bonding committee and Representative Hausman's committee, so we'll move them without recommendation to the bonding committee. Representative Holberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And at least in some years in the past, the Transportation Finance Committee has kind of put together a transportation bonding recommendation and forward that as like a formal motion or a recommendation. So by sending all these out, are we just going to let the bonding committee decide what the transportation recommendations would be, or are we going to have an opportunity to kind of put together a package of recommendations?
Thank you for that. We will definitely have the transportation recommendations forwarded to the bonding committee, and maybe we can talk further about, you know, we keep these bills here, but it was my sense talking to, you know, the capital investment folks is that those bills properly belong there. They should be heard here. But what we've had is a list, and we've ranked them. I liked how you did it in the past, Representative Holberg, and, you know, I'll have a further conversation with Representative Hausman, but I think we definitely should be weighing in on that.
All right, so, thank you.
Okay, Representative Norton.
Thank you very much, and I'm not a member of this committee, so I'm hoping someone will move House File 226 and the author's amendment for me.
Yes, yes. Thank you. Representative Benson moves the author's amendment. Well, first, actually, the bill needs to be moved first, and then we'll do the amendment. So Representative Benson moves House File 226. And then we have the A1 amendment, which you can explain to the committee, Representative Norton.
Thank you very much. Thank you for moving both the bill and the amendment. The amendment is actually to address some of the concerns from some of our local communities, and I have some folks here that can address both the bill and the amendment in greater detail. But basically, this is a pretty self-explanatory bill in that it authorizes general obligation bonds and appropriates money, $20 million for local bridges under the local bridge program, and $64 million for routes of regional significance under the local road improvement program. So a very simple bill, and the details of how the grants work can be shared with you here by a couple of my testifiers. And Mr. Chair, if I don't know if you want to move and vote on the amendment and then let them talk, or if you'd like them to testify about specifics first.
Well, I think what we would do is just incorporate the amendment now, so then you'll have the bill in front of us as you'd like. So is there any discussion about the Say One amendment? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the motion prevails. And so now we have House File 226 in the form that the author would like. So we can move forward with your thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Margaret Donahoe. I'm the director of the Minnesota Transportation Alliance. I'm just going to briefly talk about the programs in front of you, and then I'm going to turn it over to a couple of county engineers who are here today to talk more specifically about these programs and how important they have been for local governments in our state. So the Local Bridge Program and the Local Road Improvement Program were created by the legislature to assist local governments with the cost of repair and replacement of important local bridges and roadways of regional significance. Recognizing the critical role that transportation infrastructure plays in our state's economy, the legislature has been assisting counties, cities, and townships in making needed repairs to our infrastructure that industries around the state rely on to move products and move people. And this has really helped local governments who have to rely on the property tax very heavily for these local roads and bridges. State general obligation bond funds also leverage federal funds, local funds, and state aid funds, so that a combination of funding sources come together to get these projects built. The $64 million in bond funds that are provided in this bill would mean $282 million worth of roadwork in the state. These projects are ready for construction. They were submitted for funding in previous years, but there was not enough money in the program to fund these projects. So the local match is there, the projects are ready to go, but the program ran out of money. And you should have a list of those projects in your packets. It's a big spreadsheet. And so you can see all of the projects for which funding was requested, but the funding was just not available. Since the local road improvement program was first funded in 2002, the legislature has provided $96 million in bond funds for this program. These funds have supported projects at the county, city, and township levels all across the state. For the local bridge program, you should also have a map, and that kind of shows you how these bridges are distributed all around the state. These are deficient bridges, and the Office of State Aid works with local governments to prioritize which bridges receive funding, but these are all bridges that are categorized as deficient. Over the last 15 to 20 years, the legislature has typically provided $20 to $40 million per year in the capital bonding bill for the local bridge program. Currently, we have 497 bridges requesting $121 million in bond funds for the 2012 to 2014 timeframe. And just so you know, the average cost of a funded bridge using bond funds is about $436,000. So as the state works to meet the growing needs on our aging transportation infrastructure, we believe that funding for local roads and bridges in the capital bonding bill is an important component of the transportation funding picture. And I just want to briefly mention that in addition to the Transportation Alliance, there are a number of organizations that are all supporting this bill. So the Association of Minnesota Counties, the League of Minnesota Cities, the Minnesota Inter-County Association, the Minnesota Rural County Caucus, the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities, the Minnesota Association of Townships and Metro Cities have all been very supportive of this program over the years. And interestingly, we also have a number of agricultural groups that understand the importance of strengthening roads and bridges throughout the state. So groups like the Minnesota Farmers Union, the Farm Bureau, the Cattlemen's Association, wheat growers, turkey growers, potato growers, all these agricultural groups also understand the importance of funding these programs as they try to move their products around the state. So there's a lot of support for these programs, and we really appreciate your time today and hope that you will support including funding for these programs in the capital investment bill.
Welcome to the committee.
All right, Mr. Chair, my name is, thank you for having me today. My name is Wayne Sandberg. I'm the Washington County Engineer and also here representing the Minnesota County Engineers Association. Over the past few weeks, you've had the opportunity to hear from a wide range of transportation professionals. And during that time, you've heard about the vast amounts of transportation needs we have and the lack of funding to build them. At times, these stories and the size of the numbers may have seemed overwhelming. We're here today to support House Bill 226, which represents a solution to some of these transportation problems. And this bill proposes funding for two programs that have a long track record of success of implementing projects at the local level. Of course, the Local Road Improvement Program and the Bridge Bonding Program. I'm going to talk a little bit about the Local Road Improvement Program and the Routes of Regional Significance account, which would be proposed to be funded under this bill. Again, as Margaret mentioned, this program was actually created by the legislature in 2001. He brought together a group of transportation professionals at the state and local level, and their goal, their charge was to develop and recommend a way to deal with the backlog of important local projects that were out there. What this Routes of Regional Significance account does is it's used as grants to cities, towns, and counties to assist in paying costs of construction or reconstructing streets, highways, town roads that have a statewide or regional significance but have not been fully funded through other state, federal, or local funding programs. Now, while projects from all over the state were funded, as Margaret said, $64 million of other good projects were left unfunded. And that happened at the last time this bill was funded in 2011. 22 projects across the state were funded, and a total construction cost of $44.3 million was done. It was funded, the bill was actually funded at a tune of $10 million. So what that means is for every dollar placed into the account, $4 of construction actually occurred as local agencies pulled together under other funding sources. So we ask you to think of the Routes of Regional Significance program not only as a funding source to help reduce the pressure on local property taxes, but it's really a catalyst to help these projects get done that might otherwise be left undone. Now, this program is competitive, and projects are prioritized based on a number of factors, including the availability of other funding sources, how effective the proposed project is at eliminating a system deficiency, the number of persons that will be positively impacted by the project, and the level of regional or state economic development and redevelopment the project can bring. If funded, we would actually create a new solicitation so agencies that currently have needs could submit them. And if funded, counties and cities are ready to deliver these projects. This means infrastructure being fixed, jobs being created, and problems being solved. So we thank you for your consideration of this program. We ask for your continued support. And now I'm going to turn it over to Mike Sheehan to talk about the bridge bonding program.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Sheehan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Michael Sheehan. I'm the Director of Public Works, County Engineer for Olmsted County, and I'm here today to speak on behalf of the local bridge program, replacement program. This program is very vital to all the local units of government in the state of Minnesota, counties, cities, townships. It's been used very wisely in the past. We've replaced a number of bridges in the state of Minnesota with the local bridge bonding bill. And I think, as has been said many times, a road without a good bridge is not a lot of value to us. So the bridges today are critical to us in the state of Minnesota. So we're supporting the local bridge bonding bill, and we've used it, like I said, very wisely in the state of Minnesota. It's prioritized by our state aid division of the Department of Transportation, and we feel it's a very, very good program. I guess while I'm speaking to that, I could speak to the amendment a little bit, if that's
please.
At this time. The amendment has been discussed by many of us across the state at the professional level. And today, the townships pay $10,000 towards engineering and $10,000 towards construction. But the cities of 5,000 population or less aren't able to do that. The bill is not available to them. So this amendment addresses the issue with the cities under 5,000 population. And we think that's being fair to the cities under 5,000 as well as the townships, because there are townships across the state of Minnesota that have that population of 5,000 or greater. So we feel, and we're recommending to the committee, that this is a good amendment. And this way, there's a number of small cities out there with the population under 5,000. We'd be treating them in the same as we do the townships across the state of Minnesota. So with that, I'd turn it back to Representative Norton. And thank you.
Okay, thanks. We have at least one question, and before we get to that, do you have any additional things you want to share with the committee, Representative Norton?
No, just that I think this the amendment does bring in the fairness issue with townships and small cities, and I think that's a nice addition, and we did look to get that in the with the revisor, to get that in a permanent place, so we're thankful for that. And also just to say, you know, this is to fill a gap. We have lots of local needs on roads and bridges. We've not in the past been able to fund them all. This amount just addresses the unfunded ones from the past, and we know there will be those new ones that are going to be added to this list moving to the future. So we think this is a really important program and would really appreciate the committee's support.
And thank you very much, Representative Norton, for carrying this bill. Representative Benson, you had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Norton, for the committee, I think this is a number pretty close to what we spent in the last biennium with the 2 years. So thank you for bringing the bill forward. Is the 1A amendment more appropriately called the Orinoco amendment?
It will address Orinoco. Oh. Yes, Representative.
All right.
Some Rochester area politics.
Yeah. I got that call, too. My question is for Mr. Sheehan and anybody else that would like to jump in. In terms of the process of selection, you know, you and I have been out and we've taken a look at, you know, different needs to be addressed in our own area. But if you could speak to the process of the selection. And I know the mayor of Orinoco is looking forward, you know, out maybe 50 years before the bridges that have been constructed in his area will need some help. But can you go through the, help us understand, the committee understand the process of the selection of the projects?
Yeah, Representative Hornstein, Representative Benson. Yes, that process for the replacement to receive local bridge bonding dollars is a, I believe, a very, very excellent process, whereby the local unit of government submits an application to, if it's a township or a city under 5,000, to the county, and then the county submits that application to the Office of State Aid. Now, the bridge needs to be on our bridge priority list, which is very important to us, and all of us counties and cities over 5,000 have a bridge priority list that we adopt each year through our county board or our city council. And on that list, we rank or we list the bridges that are scheduled for replacement. And that's basically done on a sufficiency rating from 0 to 100. And with 100 being the best condition and 0 being the condition that's probably the bridge is probably closed. So we look at that sufficiency rating. We inspect our bridges on an annual basis. And then we determine, we work with the bridge section of the Department of Transportation and come up with this sufficiency rating, and then we, the professional staff, go through and come up with our bridge list. And for example, in Olmsted County, we probably got a 20 different bridges that we bring to our county board for adoption as far as our priority for bridge replacement on our county system and on our township and cities under 5,000. And we've got a number of bridges. You know, we've been very aggressive in trying to replace these structures. But every year you inspect these structures, it seems like there's another one or two that come up. And right now, I think a big emphasis is being placed on our timber structures that have been, many of them were done or built 40, 50 years ago. And we've found that about 40 to 45 years is the life of our timber structures. So we've got a number, and speaking on behalf of Olmsted County, we've got a number of bridges on our county system. We actually got one that's closed in a historic district that's our number one bridge, and it's scheduled to be replaced with some bridge bonding dollars in 2014. And then we've got a couple of bridges on our township system that we're looking at trying to replace. And besides that, Representative Benson, we've got a couple of timber structures that this year, the sufficiency rating dropped significantly.
Thank you.
Do you have any further questions? Thank you. Representative Earhart, did you have a question?
No, okay. I'm just waving at one of the representatives on the other side of the
table. Oh, okay. All right.
Yes.
Are there any other discussion in the committee? Well, I have consulted with a couple of our erstwhile past chairs, as well as council, and I think the proper motion is going to just be to lay this bill on the table. And what we're going to do is keep it in our committee, and we'll continue the process that past chairs have done on a bipartisan basis, which is to have a committee consultation and process where we rank the preferences of committee members and then pass a recommendation on to the bonding committee from this committee. And, you know, but always feel free to, there's additional information that you would like the committee to consider or communicate with us in any way, shape, or form moving forward, please do that. But we're going to keep this in the committee where it belongs, transportation. So with that, we'll lay this bill on the table.
Mr. Chair, thank you so much, and I would encourage you to keep this at the top of your list.
Okay, thank you.
And Mr. Chair?
Yes?
If I might, is that your intent with the next two bills as well?
Well, the Brainerd bill has trunk highway money, so I think we're going to also lay that on the table for possible inclusion in our bill. And then House File 465 is also, that's a bonding bill, so we'll lay that on the table.
All right, thank you.
No up or down votes today. So, wow, we've got a great turnout from the Highway 14 corridor, and welcome to the committee. I will move House File 210 for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Transportation Finance Bill. And Representative Reinert, welcome to our committee, and you can handle the hearing however you'd like. You maybe present the bill, and then I know you have a couple witnesses.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Thanks for hearing House File 211 today. We look forward to some very robust testimony and good discussion with committee members.
And I believe you have an author's amendment, the A1. Is that?
I do, Mr. Chair, but I'd like to first introduce the bill and then take the amendment.
As you wish. Absolutely.
Thank you. So Highway 14 is a regional priority. It serves regional centers all across southern Minnesota. Rochester, Owatonna, Waseca, Greater Mankato, and New Ulm. As many of you know, it has been a regional goal for over 40 years. Communities, businesses, and individuals along the corridor are united in their commitment to finally completing this highway. A consistent four-lane corridor from Rochester to New Ulm is the only solution that meets the long-term safety and economic needs of southern Minnesota. We deeply appreciate that last summer, Governor Dayton committed to completing the four-lane expansion of Highway 14 from North Mankato to Nicolet, but much remains to be done. This bill provides the funds to complete the four-lane expansion of the remaining two-lane segments of Highway 14 from Owatonna to Dodge Center and Nicolet to New Ulm. These projects are packaged in a single bill to reflect the regional significance of a four-lane highway serving the entire corridor. Now, Mr. Chair, I do have an author's amendment, the A1 amendment. This amendment reflects the confirmation from MnDOT that the funds for completing the North Mankato to Nicolet project have been programmed into the department's budget. So they reduce the total on the budget by $22.6 million.
Okay, thank you. Is any discussion of the A1 amendment? I believe this was an initiative from the governor's office, is that correct?
Yes, that's what I was referring, Mr. Chair, referring to earlier when last spring the governor committed to completing that portion, but we didn't reflect it in the original wording of the bill because we hadn't had the confirmation that it was actually committed, and now we have that confirmation that the money has been set aside for that portion.
Okay, thank you. We have some advice from council. Is that okay? So I'll actually move the A1 amendment, and so we have that incorporated into the bill. Is there any further discussion about it, Representative Hamilton?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Briner. Would this be new monies coming into our transportation district, or is this just moving around monies within Transportation District 7?
Representative Briner.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hamilton, are you asking about the entire allocation in this bill?
That's correct.
Yes.
Representative
Reiner. Mr. Chair, Representative Hamilton, certainly it would be new monies. There isn't $400 million in the District 7 budget.
Yeah, Mr. Chair. And thank you for that. Basically the point I'm trying to make, we're not taking dollars away from any projects that are scheduled to move forward, because this is a very important project for the district, no question about it. So we're not taking monies away from other projects that are scheduled in order to do this. Is that correct?
Representative Reiner.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hamilton. What I would say is that within both District 6 and 7, if there are monies that appropriately would be allocated to Highway 14 in the course of the next 20-year plan, then that would occur and reduce this total amount. So I'm not saying that this allotment is necessarily all new money, but it would proceed in the normal planning process, and there isn't money within the district budget to fully address this project, which is why we're putting forth this bill.
Representative Hamilton. Okay, thank you. That's a very helpful question. So we have the A1 amendment moved. Is there any further discussion on it? All those in favor of the A1 amendment signify by saying aye. Aye. All opposed, the motion prevails, and the A1 amendment is now incorporated officially into House File 210.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Today you will hear both data and personal stories from several community members from different cities and backgrounds They will offer a range of perspectives on why completing Highway 14 is so important to both the safety and the economic success of all of southern Minnesota. I'd like first to introduce Amanda Duer of the U.S. Highway 14 Partnership.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Amanda Duer with the U.S. Highway 14 Partnership. Briefly, I just want to explain, I've given you all a handout with a map of Highway 14 to kind of put this in perspective. The red segments that are on there represent the segments of the project that we're talking about today that are still two-lane from Owatonna to Dodge Center and Nicollet to New Ulm. That green segment there is from North Mankato to Nicollet, which is the portion of the road that the governor did commit to completing in 2017 to 2018. So just wanted to offer that as a bit of perspective for the discussion that goes forward. And also just wanted to bring to your attention a few important safety statistics about Highway 14. The fatality rate of Highway 14 between North Mankato and New Ulm is 1.8. Between Owatonna and Dodge Center, it's 1.91. For similarly sized rural two-lane highways, the rate is 1.3. So both segments have about 1.5 times the fatality rate of the average for similar sized rural two-lane highways across the state. And if you take into account the entire trunk highway system, which the fatality rate is 0.69, both the segments of Highway 14 have a fatality rate that's about 2.7 times higher than the entire trunk highway system. Last spring, there was a safety audit from the North Mankato to North Mankato to New Ulm portion of Highway 14, and that demonstrated some further statistics on that segment. The fatal crash rate on that segment is 2.9 times the expected amount of rural two-lane highways. The serious injury crash rate is 1.5 times the expected amount for rural roadways, and the percentage of fatal crashes is 3 times the expected amount for rural two-lane roads. So now I'm going to turn it over to the U.S. Highway 14 President, Les Abraham.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Les Abraham. I am the Owatonna City Council President and President of the Highway 14 Partnership. An immediate priority of the partnership is to make sure that MnDOT includes the full four-lane expansion of Highway 14 in its 20-year state highway investment plan. In 1968, I was discharged from the U.S. Army and came home to read in our local papers that the Highway 14 will be soon be rebuilt into a four-lane highway. That was 1968, and it's still not done. As you will hear from other members, the consistent four-lane corridors from Rochester to New Ulm is the only solution that needs the long-term safety and economic needs of our southern Minnesota area. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Abraham. Are there any questions, Mr. Abraham? Representative Benson.
Hey, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I live in Rochester, so it's an important project, but one of the things, I drive over to Owatonna a lot because I visit Cabela's probably more than I should, if you ask my wife. But I also have some concerns is that there's still a lot of at-grade crossings on these, although they're still, you know, they're four-lane. And we never hear much about what the statistics are for fatality rates on that portion. I've listened to the local news, and there still seems, in my mind at least, to be a number of fatalities between Dodge Center and Owatonna, for example. So does anybody have or can share numbers relative to the stretch that we've already improved and how that compares?
Mr. Chair, Representative Benson, well, currently Owatonna to Dodge Center is still two lane, and the fatality rate there is 1.91.
Right. So the Rochester to Casson, how does that compare?
Let me see. I have that with me. Well, I have it from Byron to Rochester, and the fatality rate there is 0.27, so significantly less.
All right, thank you.
Representative Benson.
Yeah, how much of that road, I'm trying to think now in terms of, Is that limited access or express in that stretch? That's at grade crossing, isn't it? Or
Ms.
Yeah,
Dewar?
Yeah, okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Who's next, Mr. Albrecht?
Yes.
Okay, welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Dave Albrecht. I'm the president of Poet Fauna Hospital, and I'll say this is the first time I've spoken before a legislative committee.
So welcome. Warm welcome.
You know what, I would just point out our interest from a medical perspective is really that section of road between Dodge Center and Owatonna, the two-lane. There's about 86 miles between Mankato and Rochester. Owatonna is right in the middle of that. Of that remaining stretch, there's 16 miles unfinished between Owatonna and Dodge Center. So that represents about 18% of the highway that still remains two-lane. So the impact on our hospital with respect to medical services, first, we have employees that do commute from Dodge Center and Claremont. However, the grander issue or the bigger issue that we have is just transportation of medical patients. We, over the last 12 months, transferred 581 patients to St. Mary's in Rochester from Owatonna Hospital. The majority of those transports were done by helicopter. And you might say, well, why the helicopter? It's only about 35 minutes, 40 minutes door-to-door. Well, it's simply because of the safety and the unpredictability of that two-lane stretch of Highway 14. I don't think it's just so much the traffic itself. It's the type of traffic that also lends itself to this. There is heavy truck traffic on that road, a lot of 18-wheel rigs. Bringing an ambulance down a two-lane road where trucks have to pull off onto the shoulder is risky in and of itself. There is farm equipment that routinely traverses over the road and down the road. There is a railroad crossing on a railroad that is active and used quite frequently that cuts across that highway, so there are further delays with the railroad crossing. There's also at least one, if not two, retention ponds that the road has to go around, so there's curves in there of a fairly small radius. We also have Alcorn Fuels that has located in Claremont, and if you've ever gone by there during harvest or even into the season where they're making biofuels, there is a just a long lineup of trucks waiting to unload. So the volume of traffic on that road is significant. I think the other thing that we deal with is the fact that there is growth in southern Minnesota. I think if we look at the projected population of Owatonna to be increased by 34% in the next 20 years, and that is connected to Rochester, which is the fastest growing community in Minnesota outside the metro region. So it will just put more pressure on that particular stretch of road. We were growing prior to the recession, and the indications are that Owatonna is industrial, is picking up the pace once again. I think as I look at it, one of the things that I recall vividly, and I've been in Owatonna about 7 years, it was on the old stretch that now has been replaced to the west of Owatonna. We had a accident between a motorhome from a family from Missouri who was on vacation and a semi-trailer. And I remember talking to that family that lost two, the husband and one of their children, in that accident. And it was a bad stretch of road. And you just kind of say, well, it shouldn't be, but it is treacherous. So, you know, I think just from a medical perspective, we view our relationship and our referral patterns to Rochester increasing. We've got volunteers that transport patients over there for advanced care in particularly cancer diagnosis. These are people that commute people back and forth for therapy treatments on an ongoing basis. So the pressure on the road from a medical perspective is just going to continue to grow. Thank you very much.
Good morning. My name is David Berg. I'm with the Mayo Clinic Health System, and I'm the administrator at the practice that's connected to Mr. Albrecht's hospital. As a younger person, I was an aide to the governor of South Dakota, and I staffed the Appropriations Committee. That was a long time ago. Our general appropriations budget was $350 million. We understand the cost of what we're asking for today. I hope that as we testify, we can help you see the value of what it is we're asking you to fund. And I'd like to tell you what it's like as we work at Mayo Clinic Health System Owatonna every day. Today is just like every other day. As I left the parking lot this morning, I met the cardiology van coming into the parking lot. The cardiology van came from Rochester this morning. It in that van was a highly skilled technician and about $250,000 worth of medical equipment that was coming to Owatonna to take care of patients in our practice. That transits Highway 14 every day. Soon to follow was a cardiologist making that same trek every day. They're important to the patients that seek care for medical services in Owatonna. Rural communities are faced with an increasingly difficult time recruiting medical professionals. General internal medicine is so necessary to taking care of our patients, and I'm talking about our oldest patients, our sickest patients. It takes 10 general internal medicine patients, 4 physicians, 4 in the hospital, and 6 in the clinic to do that adequately. When we recruit, those recruits drive Highway 14 to come and interview with us. When they get there, they tell us about what it's like to travel that road every day. They tell us about the safety statistics. They tell us about the time it takes. We need those medical professionals to take great care of people in our community. And Highway 14 being finished from Dodge Center into Owatonna will help us do that better. Mayo Clinic Health System Owatonna takes great care of patients. Using the community statistics from the community health care measures, our results in diabetic care, immunizations, and cancer screening are some of the best in the state. And so I want to encourage you to fund this so that we can continue to do that into the future. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Mr. Albrecht. Are there any questions of Mr. Albrecht? I wanted to just acknowledge, I invited Representative Torkelson to sit with us through this bill because this is a issue near and dear to his heart. So make sure he doesn't vote, Representative Hamilton. He can ask questions. He can ask questions, but he can't vote. And again, I've had many conversations with Representative Torkelson, and you know, he is, if you look at that furthest west unfinished segment of Highway 14, that goes right through his district. So, yeah. Representative Hamilton.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Representative Torkelson came over here to just keep me in my seat. You know, with Highway 14 and Highway 60 are two extremely important roads down in our neck of the woods. And, you know, unfortunately, it's almost been a battle between the two, when really we need to join forces and get them both completed. And so that was my concern and my line of questioning. Is this going to push back any of the other projects that are scheduled? Because we had the district engineer for District 7 in my office, and I was asking him about the completion of Highway 60, if it's still on schedule. And he assured me that it was, and we're going to be moving dirt here this year. And I said, good, if it's not, you'll be tarred and feathered. And he thought I was kidding. But and for the record, I think I was. but that's just it. I mean, Highway 14, I understand the significance. I work for a company based out of Sleepy Eye, and we have a number of feed trucks and hog trucks and everything else on there. And that road's extremely dangerous. We understand that. And the gentleman that talked about, you know, you go off and you serve our country and come back. We had an individual on Highway 60 that did the same thing. They started the Highway 60 Coalition. He served in World War II thinking that the highway would be done and came back, and here we are. And they had newspaper articles that said it would be completed in 1973, and it's not. And so I feel for you, and like I said, we need to join forces and make sure that both these projects get completed. Thank you.
Representative Beinert and then Representative Torkelson.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick comment because we do have other testifiers, but my remarks earlier were in no way to indicate that we might displacing any Highway 60 funding, but more to say that we wanted to remain open to possible funds that might not be designated now that might even come from the federal government in addition to state funding. So my comments were in that direction, not about local projects. Thank you. We do have three more testifiers. So.
Okay, but first we'll have Representative Torkelson and Representative Bernardi, and then we'll get to the testifiers. Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll make this very brief, and thank you for your warm welcome to the Transportation Finance Committee. Prior to redistricting, I think I was one of the small, probably the only representative who had both Highway 60 and Highway 14 in his district. That changed with redistricting, but both of these projects are near and dear to my heart, and I appreciate the attention being placed on Highway 14. I just hope we get that section to New Ulm done so I can start working on the section from New Ulm on into the rest of my district.
Thank you. And then Representative Bernardi.
Yes, Mr. Chair. I have a question that maybe if MnDOT could come down here. It sounds like we're getting resolution.
I'll tell you what, Representative Bernardi, maybe we should finish with the public testimony, and then we'll bring that down. And just one quick comment to this issue of Highway 60 and Highway 14 and other corridors. I think I've mentioned to the committee, but certainly if I haven't, I want everyone to know, and I'd like everyone's input on this. Over the next few weeks, I'm going to be working on some legislation that would look at some of these highways that aren't in the STIP but need to be funded. And how do we go about setting up a program, perhaps at MnDOT, to get that accomplished? And I've talked to Representative Beard and others. I call it corridors of commerce. We can call it anything we want. But there has to be, what I've really noticed over my 10 years on this committee is that there's this kind of missing piece that does, but always we have these corridors coming every single year in Highway 60 as well. There's maybe five or six in the state that we can really identify, and I really want to figure out a way that we can just move some of these forward. And so we'll be bringing forward that legislation. It's being worked on now, and if anyone has ideas, please see me. And I've talked with Representative Beard. Representative Gimsey had some ideas similar to this, and so hopefully we can get this done on a bipartisan basis. With that, you're first on the list, Representative Bernardi, but we'll get through our testimony first.
Mr. Chair, my name is Beth Hodgman. I'm here today because on November 6th, I lost my best friend, husband, father, to my children, and grandfather, to my grandchildren. Scott Hodgman was a great husband, father, and grandfather, and great friend to many people in our community. He had his priorities in the right place. He was killed on a highway that is nicknamed in 2011 by the Star and Tribune as a highway of horrors. Al Forsberg said he sees death traps where others see open road to a mix of old two-lane and new four-lane sections with blind intersections, heavy truck traffic, unexpected curves, and that's what Scott and two other people were killed on that dreadful night. Back in 2000, my parents and my sister were both injured in a head-on collision. They had serious injuries. My parents spent 3 months in a nursing home recovering, and my sister spent 6 months in a hospital bed in her living room. They all survived, but have a lot of disabilities from that. There are so many more stories of accidents along this road. When is it going to stop? We must find the funding. And until this project is done, we need to get some safety barriers up. We need to notify the drivers that the road is narrowing back to a two-lane. Right now, from Dodge Center to the place of Scott's accident, there's one sign that says reduce your speed. There's one sign that says merge traffic. And if there's a truck or traffic in the right lane, the people in the left lane are never going to see this. And that's what they think happened that night. The gentleman that was heading west was coming off the four lane and getting into the two lane, and they think he had no idea that he had made that transition because there's no warning signs. In 2011, it was wrote that the mid-1980s, more than 145 people have been killed on this highway, which winds through 265 miles of farmland from Winona to the South Dakota border. On an average, someone dies on this road every 2 months. And 75% of those deaths between 2000 and 2005 occurred in the two-lane stretches. State records show this. Highway 14 is a patchwork highway that's been under construction since the late 1960s. How many more people must lose their lives until we find funding for this road?
Thank you very much, Ms. Hodgman, for that moving testimony, and I'm very sorry for your loss and all that you've had to go through as a result of these traffic problems and safety problems. Are there any questions of Ms. Hodgman? Thank you for your testimony. I believe, is this Ms. Shaneman?
Very good.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record.
Sure. Committee Chair and committee members, thank you for the opportunity to speak with you this morning. My name is Audra Shaneman, and I'm the CEO of the New Ulm Area Chamber of Commerce. The chamber represents a variety of businesses in New Ulm. We have 330 members, and completing four lanes of Highway 14 to New Ulm is a top priority for our organization. To this end, the chamber has commissioned a cartoon to assist us in moving this issue forward in all levels, and you should have received that in your packet today. New Ulm is the home of Shell's Brewery, Flandreau State Park, and the Minnesota Music Hall of Fame. Our largest employers are Kraft Foods, 3M, New Ulm Medical Center, affiliated with Allina Health System, and Associated Milk Producers Incorporated, which manufactures award-winning butter. We also have a strong trucking industry and estimate that 1,000 trucks are affiliated with New Ulm businesses and manufacturers. The focus of my presentation is on the economic impact of Highway 14 to the community and businesses in New Ulm. Currently, we are experiencing some great indicators of economic potential. Spexis, the company out of Montevideo that primarily deals with manufacturing and railroad, mining, and agricultural equipment, in the past year has purchased one of our vacant buildings and is employing 20 people. A $25 million capital investment is planned for one of our manufacturing facilities. Martin Luther College has plans to build a 50-unit senior housing facility and to expand their early childhood learning center to double its capacity. The New Ulm Medical Center is embarking on a $5.3 million expansion of their clinic and has added 10 practitioners in the last 15 months. And we get a new Menards opening in March 2013. We are making progress, but unfortunately, Highway 14 is not making progress with us. Aaron Lombrecht, Chief Operating Officer of Shelter Products, a distributor of building materials with 35 employees, states that his company is hampered by the high cost of transporting goods in and out of New Ulm on a two-lane road. He says that other distributors that are on four-lane highways have a competitive advantage due to lower transportation costs. When the company looks to expand, they may look outside our area, which would be a tremendous loss to New Ulm. One of our major manufacturers has 8 to 10 trucks on Highway 14 daily. For this company, Highway 14 is the primary route to get their products to major highways like I-90 and I-35. Beacon Promotions, a promotional product supplier out of New Ulm, relies on Highway 14 for the sale and delivery of their goods. They ship out approximately 50,000 orders a year and receive product on a daily basis at their facility. Transporting their goods in a cost-effective manner is essential to the health of their business and the livelihoods of their 125 employees. Ken Lombrecht of KDB Services has been in the trucking industry for 35 years. He has 10 trucks, 15 employees, classic small business. His company runs trucks from New Ulm to Indiana and states that his drivers have found ways to avoid Highway 14. He believes the condition of Highway 14 is a hindrance to the manufacturing industry in New Ulm. This is confirmed by Brian Tolhall from our New Ulm Economic Development Corporation, who states that he is aware of a number of local companies who expand in other communities because New Ulm is not served by a four-lane highway. Brian is responsible for recruiting manufacturers to come to New Ulm, and he has been told by multiple site selectors that the absence of a four-lane road is a problem in the selection process. Without the improvements to Highway 14, New Ulm doesn't even make the list to attract these new businesses. Again, we are making progress, but Highway 14 is not progressing with us. The safety issues with Highway 14 are well documented. Aaron Lombrecht, who I mentioned previously, lives on Highway 14, and he and his wife do not let their children ride the school bus because of safety issues. Just recently, I was told of a New Ulm couple who remember seeing the Highway 14 deadliest road in Minnesota display at the Minnesota State Fair in about 1970. Unfortunately, this designation has not changed in over 40 years. In MnDOT language, that is over two 20-year state highway investment plans that we have not seen the Highway 14 project be a priority for MnDOT. We are grateful that Governor Dayton stepped in and has committed to completing the section between Mankato to Nicollet, but progress must not stop there. For over 40 years, New Ulm businesses have had to adapt to an inadequate road, and I am here today to advocate for them and their future success. I strongly encourage the House Transportation Finance Committee to include the Highway 14 project in the 20-year state highway investment plan and to provide funding for its completion in the near future. Thank you for this opportunity.
Well, thank you, Ms. Shaneman. That's, you know, your excellent testimony is, you know, part of this increasing helpful testimony we've gotten from chambers of commerce. We had some chambers in the metro area talking about transit, and now I think you've articulated very well, you know, the business and economic development importance of highways, and particularly Highway 14, so I really wanted to thank you for that. Are there any questions of Ms. Shannon? Chamber. Thank you for traveling up here. And our last testifier on this bill is Jonathan Ziert. I hope I've pronounced that correctly. And he is the CEO of the Greater Mankato Chamber. So
that's right.
Welcome.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Jonathan Ziert. I'm the president and CEO for Greater Mankato Growth, which is our integrated chamber of commerce and economic development organization, and has over 800 member businesses in our organization. I'm pleased to be here today and look forward to sharing with you some more perspective from business on the importance of, as the chairman referred to it, this corridor of commerce, this economic lifeline that exists in southern Minnesota called Highway 14. And I'll share those with you in a moment. But first, I want to give our thanks to Representative Breinert for her leadership on the Highway 14 legislation representing our community's interest. And I also want to thank the chair. The chair will be joining us in Mankato on Friday, visiting with members of our community and our business community to talk about the transportation issues and priorities that are important to our regional marketplace. So I thank the chair for making time to do that on Friday. I'm going to make two key points for you today to sort of amplify some of what you've already heard, reinforce it, and even share some additional statistics with you about the importance of Highway 14 as a lifeline. First, I'm going to talk about its economic importance, and second, I'll talk about that increased growth and congestion that comes with that and the kind of pressures that it creates. So first, Highway 14 is an economic vital lifeline for the region that countless businesses and individuals that work in them depend on every single day. In our community, we've had the opportunity to census various businesses and ask them about where their workforce comes from. And just taking a sampling of one of those businesses, a major manufacturer that employs about 350 individuals, more than half of their individuals commute into Mankato, North Mankato every day. And they have to use one of three corridors to do that. One of those corridors is Highway 14. We employ about 54,000 people in the Mankato, North Mankato marketplace. So if you extrapolate those percentages, it's a pretty high number of individuals that travel and commute into the Mankato, North Mankato work environment every single day. It wouldn't be uncommon for you, as David Berg gave you a story about how he started his morning and what he sees happening each morning at his clinic in Owatonna, it wouldn't be uncommon for you at all to see a steady stream of traffic driving in and out of the Mankato, North Mankato community on Highway 14 every single work morning. In addition to that, businesses have continued to express their frustration, their concern over the congestion that occurs, the amount of folks that travel on that highway, and the potential threat that it has to their business. As much as you've heard from New Ulm, the four-lane highway is an economic corridor that's dependent, and businesses need to be able to travel with dependability on and safety on. The concerns over safety and congestion are only going to increase. I want to share some statistics with you about the size of the marketplace and the growth that's expected along the Highway 14 corridor that's pretty significant. According to the state demographer, five of the counties along the corridor, Blue Earth, Dodge, Nicollet, Olmsted, and Steele, are going to experience a population growth that ranges anywhere from 13 to over 30% by 2030. It also means that the regional economy along the Highway 14 corridor is going to expand. The projections show traffic along North Mankato to New Ulm segment could grow as much as 60 to 80% by 2025, and the Owatonna to Dodge Center segment to grow by more than 50% by 2034. The growth is especially pronounced in our industries that are dependent on transportation infrastructure. According to DEED itself, by 2020, special freight trucking is going to increase by more than 50 to 57%. Building and equipment contractors will increase 43 to 54%. Medical offices, 30 to 32%. And general freight trucking by 21%. Mankato is going to be a significant contributor to this growth as well. Walmart's identified Mankato as its next site for a Midwest distribution facility, with that construction scheduled to begin in the near midterm. Our region is obviously supportive, excited, and welcomes this kind of growth in both population and economy. But we know that that added traffic volume and congestion is only going to add to the safety and transportation concerns that we already have. I go back a couple of weeks ago when I had the opportunity to testify in front of a Senate panel, and Mayor Roy Serp was here from Waseca. And I want to give him credit with an observation that he made. His observation was that in his work in the public sector as a mayor, his work on the railroad, etc., he had rarely ever seen a subject that had brought together citizens, public entities, and the private sector in a unified front about an issue that was so important. But he had observed that with a Highway 14 corridor work that needed to be done. We've seen citizens, we've seen businesses, we've seen governmental entities that have all spent time testifying, writing letters, MnDOT, governor, to legislative panels. We're deeply grateful for those that have helped move that along. We're grateful for our media that's covered that well in our marketplace and talked about the progress on Highway 14 and continue to shine a light on its importance. And I'd leave you with a final closing thought. When we look back over the last 3 years in Greater Mankato, our business community has invested in 3 years over $250 million to improve and invest and grow in its businesses in that marketplace of Mankato, North Mankato. $250 million. As they continue to make those investments and more are planned for, we know that that contributes significantly to the region and the state's economy, and we hope and we expect that our public partners will be able to find a way to make the necessary critical infrastructure investments in the marketplace as well. Going forward, we want to see Highway 14 as a top state priority that ensures we have adequate infrastructure that enables future economic development opportunities and improves safety along the corridor. The longer the four lanes put off, the more lives are going to be lost, the more expensive the project becomes, and the more regional growth that perhaps is foregone. With that, we need to conclude and bring Highway 14 to its completion now, and we ask your support in helping us do that. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you very much, Mr. Ziert. Very helpful testimony. We do have one committee member's question, and then we'll move on to Representative Benson's bill. Representative Bernardi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I was going to call on MnDOT, but then you added your comments, Mr. Chair, and I think it's a great approach to it, and we may not need MnDOT to testify today, but I think we're all in this room. Well, I don't want to speak for other people, but I know I would like our state to have a world-class multimodal transportation system, and hearing, you know, the story and the importance of economic development for this corridor, and Representative Hamilton talking about Highway 60, and the real important part is the testimony and the loss of lives on these roads, and we really need to move towards zero deaths and have zero deaths in our state. So safety is utmost importance. My point is, I liked how everybody's coming together around this issue and the importance of it, and community by community by community in the entire state coming together so that we can address these issues. And I don't think there's anyone better than Chair Hornstein to bring people together to make a case to the state and the needed funding to be able to have this world-class transportation system. So I withdraw my question to have MnDOT come down and help us achieve that. We're gonna work on that.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that, and the issue coming together is that we have people advocating, and that's ultimately how one gets things accomplished at the legislature. And so, thank you, Representative Reiner. We have one more question before you get up. Two more. Representative Earhart and then Representative Peterson, and then we do need enough time for Representative Benson's bill. So those will be the last two questions. Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One of the crucial parts of building roads, bridges, and other transportation facilities is money. So I hope you've spoken to all of the legislators in your area about supporting additional funding. And that's very important, because it seems that for many years, when I was here before, that the folks that wanted money for 14 never would vote for increased funding, which is one of the crucial parts of building this stuff. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Earhart. Yes, it's a constant discussion, but thank you for the reminder.
Okay. And then our last question belongs to Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Chairman, and this is more of a reinforcement of everything we've heard around here today. As you know, Representative Benson is on the east side and Representative Hamilton is on the west side of 14, and I'm right in the middle with it bisecting my district, and it is of utmost importance there for economic development and so forth. And we understand the need to deal with a statewide program, that statewide issue of funding for all over, including the metropolitan area, which is dealing with more congestion. But one of the things that we're also seeing is that there are more and more companies coming for distribution centers that are away from the metro area. It's just easier for them to get around. It deals with a lot of issues, and I think ultimately can help with some of the congestion issues that have potential occurring as well. So I think the fact that we can have corridors and regional areas that can be supportive of the economy and allow for transportation systems is a benefit to the state as a whole as well. And I just applaud Representative Brenner for bringing this to us.
Thanks, everybody. And again, thanks to the Highway 14 Coalition. This is exactly what we need to move transportation forward. So I appreciate it, and thank you. Members,
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members, for your time. I know you have another bill.
Yeah. So, members, we are going to lay this bill over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Transportation Finance Bill. So as the Highway 494 folks are coming down, we do have another item of business, and that's item 3, the approval of the minutes. Vice Chair Bernardi, have you had a chance?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would like to approve the minutes, and I would like you to help me with the date on those.
That would be the February 20th.
Okay, I'd like to move the
21st, excuse me, 21st.
The minutes for February 21st, Mr. Yeah. Chair.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the motion prevails. We have before us House File 465, Representative Benson. Representative Anderson, I see you. Would you like to sit at the table? Are you on your way out? Or? Okay, because you're welcome. It's, you know, we had Representative Torkelson actually sitting here if you want. It's Transportation Finance Member for a day here at the State Capitol. And we'd like to welcome you as our guest, because I know this is an important project in your district. So, welcome, Representative Benson. What we're doing on these bonding projects is we're going to keep those in our committee, and our process will be to then rank them and then make a recommendation to Representative Hausman's committee. So, you know, the motion is just we're going to just lay this bill on the table. But with that, I will move House File 465 for consideration before the committee.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate an opportunity to present this bill. And because of the time constraints right now, I will make my comments a little shorter than I had planned, and we'll give time for the testifiers and also maybe questions from the committee. First of all, Mr. Chairman and committee members, I sat and listened to the discussion of the first two bills, and all of them are worthy. I probably ought not to say that, since hopefully my bill will not be in competition, since I do have Representative Earhart, a funding source for this bill. Mr. Chairman, I have not served on the Transportation Committee, but I've served on many of the Education Committees, and we all remember that the state constitution really has two major requirements. One, that we provide adequate education for our children, K through 12, and the second, and also important, is that we provide an adequate transportation system so people can get back and forth to work and so that commerce can prosper. And so that's why I'm here. Also, this is only the third time in my 6 years that I've sought bonding. The first time I carried the bill for Governor Plenty for affordable housing, and we were successful at that. So I'm hopeful now that I will have 100% success here in my bonding obligations. The Twin Cities area, of which my district and Representative Anderson's district are a part, of course, is the 11th largest metro area in the United States, and we are a major economic force for the country as well as just here in the state of Minnesota. But we are a northern state, and we know that much of our transportation infrastructure was built in the 1960s and 70s, and that with this growth, and particularly the expansive growth that has taken place in my part of the metro area, we have fallen behind. The metropolitan area from through Plymouth, the area that we're interested in here with 494 to Maple Grove to 91, has grown greatly. I have, for example, in 1990, the range of traffic on this area of 494 that we're interested in range from 49,000 to 54,000 per day. It is now between 79,000 and 106,000, almost double since that segment was built. And I can tell you from testimony from my wife, who works in Maple Grove, it is a real challenge to get back and forth from Minnetonka through Plymouth to Maple Grove. So that's the reason we're here, and we all understand and know that MnDOT does not have the resources to meet all these needs. And I'm hoping, Mr. Chair, that you will be successful in your efforts to find a way to break through on some of these critical transportation infrastructure improvements, and I believe our request ought to be part of that. So I have a number of testifiers here today who will detail our request in more detail and discuss the proposed temporary fix that has been suggested for our area and why we find it would be money and effort not as well expended. So with that, I will turn it over to my testifiers. So
thank you very much, Representative Benson. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you. My name is Kelly Slavik. I am the mayor of Plymouth. Mr. Chair and committee members, thank you for allowing us to be here today to testify. And I appreciate Representative Benson moving this forward as well. Right now, MnDOT is proposing to add a dynamic shoulder to 494. 494 through Plymouth is the only stretch of 494 throughout the entire corridor that is two lanes. Everybody else has at least three lanes. Every other community enjoys that. So as a solution to that, MnDOT, this is my 15th year now in local government, and I keep hearing, it's coming, wait your turn. Minnetonka got their lane, Eden Prairie got their lane, everybody, Bloomington has numerous lanes. And we keep waiting and waiting for it to come to Plymouth, and we've been told to stay in line, and it'll come. It's getting to a point where it's a critical need in our community, not just from a safety perspective and congestion, but also with our business community as well, and I'll let my other testifiers address that. But this solution that MnDOT has proposed is a dynamic shoulder that would only be used in times of congestion. So it would be opened up, there'd be a red X or a green arrow above the lane, and when there's congestion on the highway, this shoulder could be used. I'll take anything I can get at this point. MnDOT is telling us it's a temporary solution, not a long-term solution. They're not sure how long it will last. Temporary might mean 15 years, not quite sure. But you're taking away our shoulder. We just had a significant accident in the last couple of weeks where the shoulder was out of commission for several hours while there was a car and tow trucks and emergency vehicles trying to get the vehicles off the shoulder. So that solution is not going to be a safe solution for us. When that shoulder is taken out, you're not going to have that lane, and the backups are just going to continue more and more. Whenever you have, as you know, three lanes going into two lanes, there's going to be backup, there's going to be congestion. It really has an impact on our community, because when people see this congestion, and it happens every day, various times throughout the day, you can probably set your watch by, you know, the rush hour, but also if there's any kind of accident or weather event, this congestion also occurs. But when people see this congestion coming, you know, they travel this road all the time, they're not stupid, they know to get off and to use Plymouth's local roads. This is creating a great expense for our city, not just on the cost of maintaining our local infrastructure, which wasn't designed for highway use, but also public safety issues where we see an increase in accidents, and we see a lot of frustration from our residents that are trying to deal with highway traffic coming and sitting in Plymouth instead of sitting on the highway. So we really support getting this, getting a permanent solution. So MnDOT's dynamic shoulder solution has about a $47 million price tag, which is a temporary solution again. And we're asking for this additional funding to create a permanent solution, a general purpose third lane that is not a, you know, scabbed in shoulder, but a lane that is consistent with the rest of the 494 corridor and would allow to be used at any time, not just in times of congestion. MnDOT, I've been begging MnDOT for over a decade now to get this completed, and they keep telling me this is the project that has the most bang for their buck out of all the projects that we're seeing. It's low cost, it's high impact. They recognize this as a corridor that really needs some attention. So we are really asking you to make sure that, you know, when you're looking at these projects, and I understand that money is scarce. I'm sure you're probably getting a little bit weary of having, you know, communities come before you and ask again and again, and I empathize with you, but this is really an important project to us. We have over 46,000 jobs in our community, and I'll let the other testifiers talk about that, but we have a lot of businesses, significant businesses, trying to move their employees and products and deliveries in and out of our community, and they're not being successful because of this congestion that we have in our community. Throughout my tenure on city council and as mayor, I have been involved in lobbying groups. I meet with MnDOT almost on a monthly basis. I go to all the Met Council transportation meetings. I'm in many of my representatives' office year after year asking for a solution, and I'm really hopeful that you'll really take this into consideration and take a look at this project for us. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Mayor, and I'll just say I'm not weary because, you know, you're making the case for why transportation is so important and needs to be a priority in this legislature. So I welcome your comments, and you know, this is why we have these kinds of hearings, and it's a great opportunity for all of us to learn about the priorities, and as you've articulated yours so well. So thank you.
Representative Benson told me you were nice. I had no idea.
No, it's important. I want to reemphasize that, Mr. Chair.
Well, and also, and Representative Hausman's very nice, too. So she also appreciates the case for transportation, because that's ultimately where this bill will go.
Mr. Chairman, I got to admit to being a bad cop, though.
Yeah, okay. You can ask your question after this. There's a question that Representative Earhart asks everybody, and I will, and you can anticipate that and think about your answer. So I believe is it Ms. Johnson next, or okay? I'm not going to. I'll try. Washi. Okay.
All right.
Welcome, and please state your name for the record.
Jeff Washi from the Plymouth City Council. Also, I am on the city's transit committee, and I am serve as vice chair on the Suburban Transit Association, and had the privilege of testifying here 7 weeks ago on behalf of the Suburban Transit Association. I am also the market manager for Bremer Bank for their Plymouth market, and I chair the Plymouth Business Council. So on all those different fronts is what I'm here to testify today on behalf of, and appreciate again Representative Benson carrying this bill forward. In terms of transit and the importance of transit at the third lane on 494, there are a couple of components. When we were here to testify about the Suburban Transit Providers Association, that was 13 different communities, mostly on the from the northwest of Maple Grove down through the southwest part, and Plymouth is in the western. Some of the concerns I know I've shared with our representation in the House and both in the Senate in terms of the Met Council's 2030 plan is, if you look at LRT and BRT routes that are planned for that, there's a big gap over the western part of the Twin Cities. You know, so if you look at the suburbs and Minnetonka, the Wayzata Mound, all the way through Plymouth, there's probably a concern in terms of potential BRT routes or the lack thereof, or LRT that can service that community. And so we look at, you know, what are the alternatives we have to make available to get our riders to their destinations. There's a couple of components to that. One is to get them, a lot of our residents work downtown, and so it's getting them quicker, they're more quickly. Part of that is our transit committee is going to be looking at utilizing shoulders on 494 in the highways, interstates, to be able to accomplish that. The issue that Mayor Slavik referred to with MnDOT suggesting as a dynamic lane or a scabbed-in shoulder, we couldn't use 494 to do that in that case. There wouldn't be, if they open that up and during rush hour, there's not enough space to run a dynamic shoulder plus hour, there's not enough space to run a dynamic shoulder plus a bus along the side. And so that's a concern as we're looking for ways to get our buses to their destinations faster. From a transit perspective, that really precludes our ability to utilize that lane if we just have a dynamic lane available to us. The other part of that is now with Target Corporation expanding their Brooklyn Park facility, with United Healthcare building their new facility in Eden Prairie, as Cargill is expanding their campuses in Minnetonka, we have many more residents that aren't just taking an east-west bound to get to their work, but they're taking much more northern and southerly to look at where they're working. And so we're looking and talking with those different corporations, those major employers, to see who works in our communities that we may meet, may be able to provide transportation to, so we can begin looking at routes that would go north-south and just instead of the traditional east-west. And I know Southwest Transit is also looking at potential. They have a lot of residents in the Eden Prairie and down the southwest part that work in Brooklyn Park up in Target. So they're also looking at providing transportation, their bus systems, to run up to the Brooklyn Park to the Target Corporation up there. Again, needing that shoulder on 494 to be able to enable that transportation of those buses to be able to get there quickly. So that's really the transit concern that we have. The concern I have is talking with many, many business owners, small business owners that, in reference to the 46,000 employees in the Plymouth market, there is two themes that resonate from them as I've talked to them about this issue. One is just scheduling. When they have their employees come in, it's just a struggle in terms of they either have to struggle employees to start early, they schedule early start shifts at 6 o'clock to avoid the traffic, or they schedule shifts that come in later than that. But scheduling for a business should not be done based on transportation and when people will get stuck in traffic. Last Thursday, when there was an emergency medical, I believe that's what the mayor was referring to, not only was the shoulder shut off, but one of the lanes was shut off. And so southbound on 494 was down to one lane. And I think that lasted for at least 1 to 2 hours. And that delayed everybody who was trying to get in, not just to Plymouth businesses, but to Minnetonka, Eden Prairie businesses, anywhere that they're heading south, was going to be significantly late that morning. So that's a significant issue. And the other issue is just their shipping. When they have to schedule shipping, they have to go around time frames, as the mayor was referring to, that would allow them to get their product. And if there's any delays in that, that can delay shipping. So there's some major disruptions that this has continued to cause year after year after year, because nothing's been done to address it in terms of a permanent fashion. So it is, if you asked any business in Plymouth, and I'm sure in Minnetonka, not having that third lane on 394 is their major number one issue in terms of running their business.
Okay. Thank you very much, Council Member Washi. And then we have one more testifier and a couple more committee questions, and we'll be adjourning at 11:30. So welcome back to the committee. You're truly a multimodal testifier here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do appreciate that. Judy Johnson, Director of Government Affairs at the Twin West Chamber of Commerce. I happen to be a council member for the city of Plymouth and former mayor, but I'm wearing my Twin West Chamber hat today. And thank you. The Twin West Chamber of Commerce, if you don't know, is a West Suburban large metro chamber representing over 10 communities. We have over 700 members, and we're happy to be here today to talk about our multimodal comprehensive solutions that we want for transit and transportation. In this case, 494 is one of our top priorities at the Twin West Chamber of Commerce as it relates to getting the third lane on 494. I won't repeat many of the great things that have been said as it relates to commerce in the corridor, and I do want to thank Representative Benson and Representative Anderson and others for their hard work on this, but I do appreciate, Mr. Chair, your comments around getting a handle on getting new money for MnDOT around the STIP process. I formerly served on the TAB board, and I've watched the program stack up and stack up, and who really rises to the top. It becomes quite a competitive process. The things that the business community really want here are making sure that we've got certainty around this corridor. It is the spine of our West Suburban Metro region, but it really serves the entire state and beyond. It's an interstate. So as you talk about the local business community, you think about the impacts on that. It's really beyond that, because we've got so many license plates coming through this corridor that aren't from our local area that rely on it as well. It's a spine because we need to make sure that the commerce in this area that serves not only the metro region but beyond is vibrant. And when there is congestion or problems in the corridor right now, there aren't reliever valves for us either. 169 is plugged up. There are no plans to improve 169 throughout our region all the way up to 694 for 30 years. We'll be getting some repaving in that corridor, but nothing as a reliever. Highway 100 will be getting some improvements that our chamber has advocated for in past years, but again, it's not enough to be a reliever for this corridor. As the mayor mentioned, it is the last piece of the entire 494, 694 loop without, three permanent lanes. Additionally, a permanent lane will not only add the lane capacity we need, but also then provide the median safety that we lack right now. About 10 years ago, we were able to get median cable barriers in the corridor, which has helped prevent some deaths in the corridor, but it's still certainly not the permanent safety solution we need. I appreciate the term corridors of commerce. If there's a coalition in the state that we can get on board and join to support others' projects as well, if they'll support ours, we're there. You understand that in order for business to thrive and survive, time is money, and to sit in congestion and to have to plan alternate routes or delay or not do what you need to do in your business day costs money. And right now, I know this legislature and certainly the chambers and everybody in the state of Minnesota is really working to grow jobs in our economy, and we would rely on a multimodal transit and transportation system, and this is a piece that we really do hope gets funded this session. So thank you for your time today.
Thank you very much, Ms. Johnson, Councilmember Johnson. So we have time for a couple of questions, and I'm going to have Representative Metz. Absolutely. I'd love to hear from you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I will be brief. You've been very gracious to have us here today. As all of the testifiers mentioned, this really is our first line of defense when it comes to traffic congestion management within the metro area. Many legislators' districts are impacted by whether or not 494 is congested. And if you ever get a chance to get out there, it starts at 2:30 in the afternoon where you're at a dead standstill on this stretch of highway because we don't have the added lane. You've got members, Representative Winkler, Representative Lynn Carlson, you've got John Benson, Zellers, even Freiberg, and as Representative O'Neill pointed out, when you're coming from just the western side of the metro area, those legislators' districts are impacted by whether or not the stretch of highway is congested, and it is. I'm glad to hear that you're looking at economic corridors. Councilmember Washi mentioned some companies. Here's some others for you that are impacted by the congestion that happens on this corridor. Boston Scientific, General Mills, Turk. We have the West Health Campus, which is really a major medical facility for people in the western metro area. This is huge for us as far as jobs in general and being able to support that. Our city actually grows in size during the day. Does it double? Is it as much as doubling during the day?
It fluctuates up to about maybe another 50-75%.
So, significant number of people are coming out this way, too, and if we don't have that transportation infrastructure to support that, it just makes it more difficult. So Thank you for your time.
Thank you. And so we have a couple of minutes for a couple of questions. I'll have Representative Metza first, and we'll give Representative Earhart Representative O'Neill, and then we'll give Representative Earhart the last word here.
There is
another testifier. Oh, I'm sorry. If we could do it very quickly, because we need to adjourn by 11:30, we have a couple of questions. I'm sorry, I didn't see you on the list.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. I will try to be very brief. I know we're up against the end of your committee time. My name is Noreen Dillon. I am a resident of Plymouth. I'm here of my own time, on my own dime. That is just how important this project is to us. My exit is right in the middle of this stretch of highway, so it doesn't matter which direction I'm coming or going from. I sit in it. I would like to point out just very quickly a few things. It has not been mentioned here that a new emergency room opened in Plymouth very recently. I mean, this also goes now into some health and safety issues. I mean, for ambulances to be able to move quickly and exit efficiently to get people to that new facility. In the current MnDOT STIP, there is about $6 million that is planned for 2014 to paint and redeck bridges. Well, that would fly in the face of common sense to paint a bridge that we're then going to replace. I urge you to prioritize this this bonding to make this permanent solution. Signal to MnDOT that, again, not to perhaps waste that money and to have it tied back in even to this project. And I'll just echo what's been said already, that these issues are very important, this corridor for commerce and everything. Last year, I worked quite hard as a volunteer for Representative Benson's opponent. But I'm here today thanking him for his support to bring this bill forward. This really is a project that is very, very important to our area and beyond because of it being an interstate. So I thank you for your time, and I'll take any questions if you want, but I do hope it makes your list of priorities for capital investment.
No, thank you very much, and it's really great to have citizens, you know, coming and testifying in addition to public officials in the business community. So very quickly, members, I have Metza, O'Neill, and Earhart. Representative Metza.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I just kind of have a clarification question and one quick comment. If we have a four-lane in Virginia, Minnesota, I think you guys get a little better in Plymouth. I've been stuck over there, too. So hope this meets our priority list. And I just wanted to check, the shoulder project was a projected MnDOT project on the books already, correct? And so this would be separate, not in addition to in the cost, or would it be both the amounts of money together that would make this work?
We are hoping that it could be both. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, Mayor Slavik will
take. Sorry about that. I'm mayor. I'm used to just
I like that.
Mr. Chair, committee members, what MnDOT's plan is they were going to repay 494 anyway in 2014. They decided that for $47 million they could put this dynamic shoulder in and do it all at once. Now what we're asking for is to really do it right and put that, since it's going to be repaved, to take that $47 million, that program for the dynamic shoulder, and add this $50 million to make it a general purpose third lane. We don't have, I've pressed MnDOT a bit for an estimated cost. You know, 10 years ago it was a $70 million project. We're not quite sure where the numbers would be now, but I don't think it's probably at $97 million. Hopefully, when you're combining these, really the maintenance and the money program for the dynamic shoulder, we're hoping it would come in at a little less.
Perfect. Thank you. And then we have Representative O'Neill and Representative Earhart.
You know, I'm going to withdraw because I was going to ask the exact same question that Metza just did. I was confused with the numbers, too. Went from 47 to 50. I didn't understand, but thank you for the clarification. Okay.
Excellent. And then our last question or comment from Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You folks have a convert to helping you fund that highway. Representative Metza is almost volunteered. But I'm going to suggest that you sit down with the rest of the legislators in your area on a one-on-one basis and talk to them. Because as I remember, the last time we had a nice funding bill, none of them voted for it. And it would be very important to get, since you guys want that, and I assume they do, since they are part of your community, you got to talk to them. Is that fair?
Thank Representative Benson, I'm going to give you, as the author, the very last, very quick word on this. And thank you for that, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, the numbers, I think, indicate the significance of this request. It doubled the number of traffic on this area. It is hurting the economic development of my part of the state. And to Representative Earhart, I have already photocopied all the names and faces and addresses of all the members of this committee and have given it to these folks here, and their job, I have given them the job, is to contact every single member who represent anything even close to the West Metro to get on board and to vote for this bonding bill. Thank you, Mr.
Thank you. Very. We've had some great testimony, all three bills today. So, members, this bill I'm going to lay on the table. We're going to keep this in the committee, and we're going to discuss it and then forward this as one of our, you know, we will have a process in terms of which bonding bills we prioritize for Representative Hausman's committee, because this is a bonding bill. So with that, we'll lay this bill on the table. Members, before you leave, and thank you, Plymouth, for your testimony. Before everyone leaves, I have a quick announcement. So tomorrow, we have one bill before the committee. We're going to meet at 10 o'clock. We have session at 11, and then there's another, I know that there's budget briefings that are happening But we need to get a quorum for a 10 o'clock hearing tomorrow very quickly. Representative Nelson's has a bill for the Transportation Ombudsman that we're going to move to the floor. So I'd like folks to get here promptly at 10. It's a very quick meeting, and then we'll be able to again go about our business. But we did want to move that one bill tomorrow. So 10 o'clock, be prompt, and then we'll be moving on from there. So with that, we're adjourned.